partly audiobook on Extract From, The Astral Body, and Other Astral Phenomena. By Arthur Ray Dot Powell. Published in 1927. Chapter 9. Sleep Life. The real cause of sleep would appear to be that the different inner bodies, quotation, grow tired of one another. In the case of the physical body, not only every muscular exertion, but also every feeling and thought, produce certain slight chemical changes. A healthy body is always trying to counteract these changes, but it never quite succeeds whilst the body is awake. Consequently, with every thought, feeling or action there is a slight, almost imperceptible loss, the cumulative effect of which eventually leaves the physical body too exhausted to be capable of further thought or work. In some cases even a few moments of sleep will be sufficient for recuperation, this being affected by the physical elemental. In the case of the astral body, it very soon becomes tired of the heavy labor of moving the particles of the physical brain, and needs a considerable period of separation from it to enable it to gather strength to resume the irksome task. On its own plane, however, the astral body is practically incapable of fatigue, since it has been known to work incessantly for 25 years without showing signs of exhaustion. Although excessive and long-continued emotion tires a man very quickly in ordinary life, it is not the astral body which becomes fatigued, but the physical organism through which the emotion is expressed or experienced. Similarly with the mental body. When we speak of mental fatigue, it is in reality a misnomer, for it is the brain, not the mind, that is tired. There is no such thing as fatigue of the mind. Page 83. When a man leaves his body in sleep, or in death, the pressure of the surrounding astral matter, which really means the force of gravity on the astral plane, immediately forces other astral matter into the astrally empty space. Such a temporary astral counterpart is an exact copy, so far as arrangement is concerned, of the physical body, but nevertheless it has no real connection with it, and could never be used as a vehicle. It is merely a fortuitous concurrence of particles, drawn from any astral matter of a suitable kind that happens to be at hand. When the true astral body returns, it pushes out this other astral matter without the slightest opposition. This is clearly one reason why extreme care should be exercised as to the surroundings in which a man sleeps, for, if those surrounding are evil, astral matter of an objectionable type may fill the physical body while the man's astral body is absent, leaving behind influences which cannot but react unpleasantly upon the real man when he returns. When a man goes to sleep, his higher principles in their astral vehicle withdraw from the physical body, the dense body and the etheric body remaining by themselves on the bed, the astral body floating in the air above them. In sleep, then, a man is simply using his astral body instead of his physical. It is only the physical body that is asleep, not necessarily the man himself. Usually the astral body, thus withdrawn from the physical, will retain the form of the physical body, so that the person is readily recognizable to anyone who knows him physically. This is due to the fact that the attraction between the astral and the physical particles, continued all through physical life, sets up a habit or momentum in the astral matter, which continues even while it is temporarily withdrawn from the sleeping physical body. For this reason, the astral body of a man who is asleep will consist of a central portion corresponding, page 84, to the physical body, relatively very dense, and a surrounding aura, relatively much rarer. In the case of a very undeveloped man, such as a savage, he may be nearly as much asleep as his physical body, because he is capable of very little definite consciousness in his astral body. He is also unable to move away from the immediate neighborhood of the sleeping physical body, and if an attempt were made to draw him away in his astral body, he would probably awake in his physical body in terror. His astral body is a somewhat shapeless mass, a floating wreath of mist, roughly ovoid in shape, but very irregular and indefinite in outline, the features and shape of the inner form, the dense astral counterpart of the physical body, are also vague, blurred and indistinct, but always recognizable. A man of this primitive type has been using his astral body, during waking consciousness, sending mind currents through the astral to the physical brain. But when, during sleep, the physical brain is inactive, the astral body, being undeveloped, is incapable of receiving impressions on its own account, and so the man is practically unconscious, being unable to express himself clearly through the poorly organized astral body. The centers of sensation in it may be affected by passing thought forms, and he may answer in it to stimuli that rouse the lower nature. But the whole effect given to the observer is one of sleepiness and vagueness, the astral body lacking all definite activity and floating idly, inch 08, above the sleeping physical form. In a quite unevolved person, therefore, the higher principles, that is, the man himself, are almost as much asleep as the physical body. In some cases the astral body is less lethargic, and floats dreamily about on the various astral currents, occasionally recognizing other people in a similar condition, and meeting with experiences of all sorts, pleasant and unpleasant, the memory of which, hopelessly confused and often travestied into a grotesque, page 85, caricature of what really happened, see chapter 10 on dreams, will cause the man to think next morning what a remarkable dream he has had. In the case of a more evolved man, there is a very great difference. The inner form is much more distinct and definite, a closer reproduction of the man's physical appearance. Instead of the surrounding mistreath, there is a sharply defined ovoid form preserving its shape unaffected amidst all the varied currents which are always swirling around it on the astral plane. A man of this type is by no means unconscious in his astral body, but is quite actively thinking. Nevertheless, he may be taking very little more notice of his surroundings than the savage. Not because he is incapable of seeing, but because he is so wrapped up in his own thought that he does not see, though he could do so if he chose. Whatever may have been the thoughts engaging his mind during the past day, he usually continues them when he falls asleep, and he is thus surrounded by so dense a wall of his own making that he observes practically nothing of what is going on outside. Occasionally a violent impact from without, or even some strong desire of his own from within, may tear aside this curtain of mist and permit him to receive some definite impression. But even then the fog would close in again almost immediately, and he would dream on unobservantly as before. In the case of a still more developed man, when the physical body goes to sleep, the astral body slips out of it, and the man is then in full consciousness. The astral body is clearly outlined and definitely organized, bearing the likeness of the man, and the man is able to use it as a vehicle far more convenient than the physical body. The receptivity of the astral body has increased, until it is instantly responsive to all the vibrations of its plane, the fine as well as the coarser, but in the astral body of a very highly developed person, page 86, there would, of course, be practically no matter left capable of responding to coarse vibrations. Such a man is wide awake, is working far more actively, more accurately, and with greater power of comprehension, than when he was confined in the denser physical vehicle. In addition, he can move about freely and with immense rapidity to any distance, without causing the least disturbance to the sleeping physical body. He may meet and exchange ideas with friends, either incarnate or discarnate, who happen to be equally awake on the astral plane. He may meet people more evolved than himself, and receive from them warning or instruction, or he may be able to confer benefits on those who know less than himself. He may come into contact with non-human entities of various kinds, see chapters 20 and 21 on astral entities. He will be subject to all kinds of astral influences, good or evil, strengthening or terrifying. He may form friendships with people from to their parts of the world, he may give or listen to lectures, if he is a student, he may meet other students and, with the additional faculties which the astral world gives, he may be able to solve problems which presented difficulties in the physical world. A physician, for example, during the sleep of the body, may visit cases in which he is especially interested. He may thus acquire new information, which may come through as a kind of intuition to his waking consciousness. In a highly evolved man, the astral body, being thoroughly organized and vitalized, becomes as much the vehicle of consciousness on the astral plane as the physical body is on the physical plane. The astral world being the very home of passion and emotion, those who yield themselves to an emotion can experience it with a vigor and a keenness mercifully unknown on earth. Whilst in the physical body most of the efficiency of an emotion is exhausted in transmission to the physical plane, but in the astral, page 87, world the whole of the force is available in its own world. Hence it is possible in the astral world to feel far more intense affection or devotion than is possible in the physical world. Similarly, an intensity of suffering is possible in the astral world which is unimaginable in ordinary physical life. An advantage of this state of affairs is that in the astral world all pain and suffering are voluntary and absolutely under control. Hence life there is much easier, for the man who understands. To control physical pain by the mind is possible, but exceedingly difficult, but in the astral world anyone can in a moment drive away the suffering caused by a strong emotion. The man has only to exert his will, when the passion straightway disappears. This assertion sounds startling, but it is nevertheless true, such being the power of will and mind over matter. To have attained full consciousness in the astral body is to have already made a considerable amount of progress. When a man has also bridged over the chasm between astral and physical consciousness, day and night no longer exist for him, since he leads a life unbroken in its continuity. For such a man, even death, as ordinarily conceived, has ceased to exist, since he carries that unbroken consciousness not only through night and day, but also through the portals of death itself, and up to the end of his life upon the astral plane, as we shall see later when he come to deal with the after-death life. Traveling in the astral body is not instantaneous, but it is so swift that space and time may be said to be practically conquered, for although a man is passing through space, it is passed through so rapidly that its power to divide is nearly non-existent. In 2 or 3 minutes a man might move round the world. Any fairly advanced and cultured man among the higher races of mankind has already consciousness fully developed in the astral body, and is perfectly capable of employing it as a vehicle, though in many, page 88, case he does not do so, because he has not made the definite effort which is at first necessary, until the habit becomes established. The difficulty with the ordinary person is not that the astral body cannot act, but that for thousands of years that body has been accustomed to being set in motion only by impressions received through the physical vehicle, so that men do not realize that the astral body can work on its own plane and on its own account, and that the will can act upon it directly. People remain unawake astrally because they get into the habit of waiting for the familiar physical vibrations to call out their astral activity. Hence they may be said to be awake on the astral plane, but not in the least to the plane, and consequently they are conscious of their surroundings only very vaguely, if at all. When a man becomes a pupil of one of the masters, he is usually at once shaken out of his somnolent condition on the astral plane, fully awakened to the realities around him on that plane, and set to learn from them and to work among them, so that his hours of sleep are no longer a blank, but are filled with active and useful occupation, without in the least interfering with the healthy repose of the tired physical body. In chapter 28 on Invisible Helpers we shall deal more fully with carefully planned and organized work in the astral body. Here it may be stated that even before that stage is reached, a great deal of useful work may be and is constantly being done. A man who falls asleep with the definite intention in his mind of doing a certain piece of work will assuredly go and attempt to carry out his intention as soon as he is freed from his physical body and sleep. But, when the work is completed, it is likely that the fog of his own self-centered thoughts will close round him once more, unless he has accustomed himself to initiate fresh lines of action when functioning apart from the physical brain. In some cases, of course, the work, Page 89, chosen is such as to occupy the whole of the time spent in sleep, so that such a man would be exerting himself to the fullest extent possible, so far as his astral development permits. Everyone should determine each night to do something useful on the astral plane, to comfort someone in trouble, to use the will to pour strength into a friend who is weak or ill, to calm someone who is excited or hysterical, or to perform some similar service. Some measure of success is absolutely certain, and if the helper observes closely, he will often receive indications in the physical world of definite results achieved. There are four ways in which a man may be awakened to self-conscious activity in his astral body. 1. By the ordinary course of evolution, which, though slow, is sure. 2. By the man himself, having learned the facts of the case, making the requisite study and persistent effort to clear away the mist from within and gradually overcome the inertia to which he is accustomed. In order to do this, the man should resolve before going to sleep to try when he leaves the body to awaken himself and see something or do some useful work. This, of course, is merely hastening the natural process of evolution. It is desirable that the man should first have developed common sense and moral qualities, this for two reasons: first, lest he may misuse such powers as he may acquire; second, lest he be overwhelmed by fear in the presence of forces which can neither understand nor control. 3. By some accident, or by unlawful use of magical ceremonies, he may so rend the veil that it can never wholly be closed again. Instances of this are to be found in A Bewitched Life by H. P. Blavatsky, and in Zanoni by Lord Bulwer Lytton. 4. A friend may act from without upon the closed shell surrounding the man and gradually arouse the, page 90, man to higher possibilities. This, however, would never be done unless the friend were quite sure that the man to be awakened possessed the courage, devotion, and other qualifications necessary for useful work. But the need of helpers on the astral plane is so great that every aspirant may be certain that there will not be a day's delay in arousing him as soon as he is seen to be ready. It may be added that when even a child has been awakened on the astral plane, the development of the astral body would proceed so rapidly that he would very soon be in a position upon that plane but little inferior to that of the awakened adult, and would, of course, be much in advance, so far as usefulness is concerned, of the wisest man who is as yet unawakened. But unless the go expressing himself through the child body possessed the necessary qualification of a determined yet loving disposition, and had clearly manifested it in his previous lives, no occultist would take the very serious responsibility of awakening him on the astral plane. When it is possible to arouse children in this way, they often prove most efficient works on the astral plane, and throw themselves into this work with a whole-souled devotion which is beautiful to see. Also, while it is comparatively easy to waken a man on the astral plane, it is practically impossible, except by a most undesirable use of mesmeric influence, to put him to sleep again. Sleeping and waking life are thus seen to be in reality but one. During sleep we are aware of that fact, and have a continuous memory of both, that is, astral memory includes the physical, though, of course, the physical memory by no means always includes the memory of the astral experiences. The phenomenon of sleepwalking, somnambulism, may apparently be produced in several distinct ways. 1. The ego may be able to act more directly upon, page 91, the physical body during the absence of the mental and astral vehicles. In cases of this nature, a man might be able, for example, to write poetry, paint pictures, etc., which would be far beyond his ordinary powers when awake. 2. The physical body may be working automatically, and by force of habit, uncontrolled by the man himself. Instances of this occur where servants rise in the middle of the night and light a fire or attend to other household duties to which they are accustomed, or where the sleeping physical body carries out to some extent the idea dominant in the mind before falling to sleep. 3. An outside entity, incarnate or discarnate, may seize the body of a sleeping man and use it for his own ends. This would be most likely to happen with a person who is mediumistic, that is, whose bodies are more loosely joined together than usual and therefore more readily separable. With normal people, however, the fact that the astral body leaves the physical body during sleep does not open the way to obsession, because the ego always maintains a close connection with his body and he would quickly be recalled to it by any attempt that might be made upon it. 4. A directly opposite condition may also produce a similar result. When the principles or bodies fit more tightly than usual, the man, instead of visiting a distant place in his astral body only, would take his physical body along as well, because he is not wholly dissociated from it. 5. Somnambulism is probably also connected with the complex problem of the various layers of consciousness in man, which under normal circumstances are unable to manifest themselves. Closely akin to sleep life is the condition of trance, which but the sleep state, artificially or abnormally induced. Mediums and sensitives readily pass out of the physical body into the astral body, usually unconsciously. The astral body can then exercise its functions, page 92, such as that of traveling to a distant place, gathering impressions there from surrounding objects and bringing them back to the physical body. In the case of a medium, the astral body can describe these impressions by means of the entranced physical body. But, as a rule, when the medium comes out of the trance, the brain does not retain the impressions thus made on it, no trace being left in the physical memory of the experience is acquired. Occasionally, but rarely, the astral body is able to make a lasting impression on the brain, so that the medium is able to recollect the knowledge acquired during trance. Page 93. Chapter 10. Dreams. Consciousness and activity in the astral body are one thing, the memory in the brain of that astral consciousness and activity are a totally different matter. The existence or the absence of physical memory in no way affects the consciousness on the astral plane, nor the ability to function in the astral plane with perfect ease and freedom. It is, in fact, not only possible, but also by no means uncommon, for a man to function freely and usefully in his astral body during the sleep of the physical body, and yet to return to the physical body without the slightest memory of the astral work upon which he has been engaged. The break in consciousness between the astral and the physical life is due either to undevelopment of the astral body, or to the want of an adequate etheric bridge between the astral and the dense physical matter of the bodies. This bridge consists of the closely woven web of atomic matter, through which the vibrations have to pass, and which causes a moment of unconsciousness, like a veil, between sleeping and waking. The only way in which memory of the astral life can be brought through into the physical brain is by sufficient development of the astral body and by an awakening of the etheric chakrams, one function of which is to bring forces from the astral to the etheric. In addition, there must be active functioning of the pituitary body, which focuses the astral vibrations. Sometimes, on awakening, there is a feeling that something has been experienced of which no memory remains. The feeling indicates that there has been, page 94, astral consciousness, though the brain is insufficiently receptive to receive the record. At other times, the man in his astral body may succeed in making a momentary impression on the etheric double and the dense body, resulting in a vivid memory of the astral life. This is sometimes done deliberately when something occurs which the man feels that he ought to remember on the physical plane. Such a memory usually vanishes quickly and cannot be recovered. Efforts to recover the memory, by setting up strong vibrations in the physical brain, still further overpower the more delicate astral vibrations, and consequently render success even more impossible. There are some events, too, which make such a vivid impression upon the astral body that they become impressed upon the physical brain by a kind of repercussion, see page 242. In other cases, a man may succeed in impressing new knowledge on the physical brain, without being able to convey also the memory of where or how that knowledge was gained. Instances of this, common to most people, occur where solutions of problems, previously insoluble, suddenly arise in the consciousness, or where light is suddenly thrown onto questions previously obscure. Such cases may be taken to indicate that progress is being made with the organization and functioning of the astral body, although the physical body is still only partially receptive. In cases where the physical brain does respond, there are vivid, reasonable and coherent dreams, such as occur to many people from time to time. Few people, when in the astral body, care whether the physical brain remembers or not, and 9 out of 10 much dislike returning to the body. In coming back to the physical body from the astral world, there is a feeling of great constraint, as though one were being enveloped in a thick, heavy cloak. The joy of life on the astral plane is so great that physical life in comparison with it seems no life at all. Many regard the daily return to the physical body as men, page 95, often do their daily journey to the office. They do not positively dislike it, but they would not do it unless they were compelled. Eventually, in the case of highly developed and advanced persons, the etheric bridge between the astral and the physical worlds is constructed, and then there is perfect continuity of consciousness between the astral and the physical lives. For such people, life ceases to be composed of days of remembrance and nights of oblivion, and becomes instead a continuous whole, year after year, of unbroken consciousness. Occasionally, a man who has normally no memory of his astral life may unintentionally, through an accident, or illness, or intentionally by certain definite practices, bridge over the gap between astral and physical consciousness, so that from that time onwards his astral consciousness will be continuous, and his memory of his sleep life therefore be perfect. But, of course, before this could take place, he must already have developed full consciousness in the astral body. It is merely the rending of the veil between the astral and physical that is sudden, not the development of the astral body. The dream life may be considerably modified as a direct result of mental growth. Every impulse sent by the mind to the physical brain has to pass through the astral body, and, as astral matter is far more responsive to thought vibrations than is physical matter, it follows that the effects produced on the astral body are correspondingly greater. Thus, when a man has acquired mental control, that is, has learned to dominate the brain, to concentrate, and to think as and when he likes, a corresponding change will take place in his astral life, and, if he brings the memory of that life through into the physical brain, his dreams will become vivid, well-sustained, rational, even instructive. In general, the more the physical brain is trained to answer to the vibrations of the mental body, the more is the bridging of the gulf between waking and sleeping, page 96, consciousness facilitated. The brain should become more and more the obedient instrument of the man, acting under impulses from his will. The dreaming of ordinary events does not interfere with astral work, because the dreaming takes place in the physical brain, while the real man is away attending to other matters. It does not really matter what the physical brain does, so long as it keeps itself free from undesirable thoughts. Once a dream is started, its course cannot usually be changed, but the dream life can be controlled indirectly to a considerable extent. It is especially important that the last thought on sinking to sleep should be a noble and elevating one, as this strikes the keynote which largely determines the nature of the dreams which follow. An evil or impure thought attracts evil and impure influences and creatures, which react on the mind and astral body and tend to awaken low and earthly desires. On the other hand, if a man falls asleep with his thoughts fixed on high and holy things, he will automatically draw around him elementals created by similar efforts of others, and consequently his dreams will be lofty and pure. As we are dealing in this book mainly with the astral body, and phenomena closely associated with it, it is not necessary to attempt to deal exhaustively with the somewhat large subject of dream consciousness. Nevertheless, in order to show the proper setting of the part which the astral body plays in the dream life, it